Turning now to our reading of Tesla, Man Out of Time, by Margaret Cheney. As we read about Nikola's life after returning from Colorado in 1900, please consider what it would mean for the power guys of that time, folks like J.P. Morgan and the heads of state that Nikola would appeal to for support as World War I loomed. Support in scaling up his particle beam EMF weapon in order to put a fast end to conflict through its awe-inspiring, if awful, demonstration of unassailable force. What would go through the minds of those who lust for power unassailable to learn of Nikola's invention? Think of what the current versions would do, and you know what they did. Continuing chapter 15, Magnificent and Doomed. Nikola Tesla and J. Pierpont Morgan met for a talk about the world system of communication that Tesla wanted to establish. Tesla instinctively was less forthcoming than he had been with Westinghouse. No need to distract the financier with too much technical information. Instead, he dilated on themes of money and power, where others in the field were thinking only in limited terms of point-to-point transmissions, as in ship-to-shore and transoceanic wireless. Tesla was talking about broadcasting to the entire world. Morgan was interested. Nikola made no mention to Morgan of the wireless transmission of power, not because he'd given up the idea, but for the prudent reason that it would have made some of the banker's existing investments obsolete. Morgan replied that he would agree to finance Tesla to the extent of $150,000. That, however, he warned, was as far as he would go. Although he advanced only a portion of this sum, and although the country was in the throes of rampaging inflation, which caused Tesla's bankroll to begin shrinking immediately, the latter was nevertheless ecstatic. The relationship, no doubt a familiar one for Morgan, quickly became like that between courtier and king. Morgan was a great and generous man, quoting Tesla. Tesla's work would proclaim loudly your name to the world. You will soon see that not only am I capable of appreciating deeply the nobility of your action, but also of making your primary philanthropic investment worth 100 times the sum you have put at my disposal in such a magnanimous, princely way. Unquote from Nikola. Morgan, says Margaret Cheney, who had no interest in philanthropic business arrangements, responded by sending Tesla a draft of their agreement and asking him to sign over 51% interest in his various radio patents as security for the loan. Tesla sent Morgan a note in which he quoted an admiring comment from Professor Slaby, now a German privy counselor, in addition to being a renowned scientist. Quote from Professor Slaby, I am devoting myself since some time to investigations in wireless telegraphy, which you have first founded in such a clear and precise manner. It will interest you as father of this telegraphy to know. Unquote from Professor Slaby. This would indicate to Morgan the speciousness of claims being advanced by Marconi and others. Tesla also observed to his patron that neither Raphael nor Columbus could have succeeded without their wealthy sponsors. With financing apparently assured, Tesla now set about acquiring land on which to build his transmitter. James D. Warden, manager and director of the Suffolk County Land Company, who owned 2,000 acres on Long Island, made 200 acres at Shoreham available to the inventor. The parcel, isolated and wooded, was adjacent to the farms of Jemima Randall and George Hegeman, and 65 miles from Brooklyn. The delighted Tesla christened the site Wardenclyffe and visualized it as becoming one of the first industrial parks. 2,000 persons would be employed at the World Broadcasting Station while their families resided in the surrounding development. In March 1901, Tesla went to Pittsburgh to place orders with Westinghouse for generators and transformers. At the same time, he had agents in England scouting the coastline for a suitable location on that side of the ocean. He was now far too busy to think of the Paris Exposition, which came and went without a world-shaking demonstration by the inventor. W.D. Crowe, an architectural associate of White's, worked closely with Tesla on the design of a tower which would have at its peak a giant donut-shaped copper electrode 100 feet in diameter. Later, this was changed to resemble the cap of a gigantic mushroom. The octagonal tower, made entirely of wooden beams pre-assembled on the ground, would rise from a large brick building. But the total height of this fantastic structure posed a worrisome question because of wind resistance. On September 13, Tesla wrote Stanford White, "I have not been half as dumbfounded by the news of the shooting of the president," McKinley was shot on September 6, "as I have by the estimates submitted by you, which, together with your kind letter of yesterday, I received last night. One thing is certain, we cannot build that tower as outlined. I cannot tell you how sorry I am, for my calculations show that with such a structure, I could reach across the Atlantic." For a time, they considered falling back on an older design, utilizing two or maybe three much smaller towers. But eventually, a single tower was built that soared to a height of 187 feet. Within it was a deep steel shaft that ran 120 feet down into the earth. This shaft, encased by a timber-lined well 12 feet square and encircled by a spiral stairway, was designed so that air pressure could raise it to touch the tower's top platform. Wardenclyffe was a landmark as magnificent in concept and execution as America's golden age of electrical engineering ever produced. Magnificent and doomed. And we will leave it there with that. And next week, continue chapter 15, Magnificent and Doomed, in Margaret Cheney's Tesla, Man Out of Time.